17 minutes past 7 Central African time. It's time for the weekly edition of the Middle East Update. And joining us this morning on the Middle East Update, we have Daoud Khattab. He is a former professor of journalism at Princeton University. He's a Palestinian journalist and media activist. He was born in Jerusalem, studied in the United States, and he has been working in journalism ever since the 80s. He joins us this morning on the line. Daoud, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome.
Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Let's start with Lebanon. Tell us about the You Stink protest.
Well, in Lebanon, they've had a problem with their leadership. They have not been able to agree on electing a president for about a year and a half. And the difficulties of managing the country broke out about 2 months ago when they weren't able to agree, the government wasn't able to agree on a landfill, and so the garbage started collecting and piling up. And a lot of young people created the hashtag and created a movement called You Stink, and they basically are using the lack of garbage collection to actually basically say the whole country and the whole government stinks like the country, and they're trying to remove all the government officials who basically they feel are corrupt and using their positions to further their own causes.
Now, from Lebanon to Yemen, what's the latest on the war in Yemen?
Well, in Yemen, the legitimate government of Abdel Hadi Abd Rabbo have basically cleared up, with the help of the Saudi government and Saudi coalition, the south of Lebanon, the Yemen area, Aden area, and the few districts around the southern former in a strong city of Aden, are now under the control of the legitimate government, and they are moving northward towards Sana'a. But there's also at the same time attempts to have peace talks, and so the disagreement now is over the Security Council resolution, which calls for the Houthis to lay off their weapons and withdraw from their locations. And of course, they're not going to do that unless there's some kind of guarantee of their safety and so on. And so there is behind the scenes negotiations while the military is still fighting in the battles in different locations.
What kind of reputational damage has Saudi had to bear as a result of its bombardment of Yemen?
Well, they've had to pay two prices. The first price is that they've had a number of their people, and yesterday even one of their commanders was killed, and so they're actually losing, human beings being killed from the military, and also some of the bordering towns are being shelled, and so there's a psychological and physical damage. But I think politically also they are suffering in that they are falling the quagmire of Yemen, and it's not a good reputation for a country that for many years depended more on diplomacy than on military. But they probably feel that people took advantage of them, and they wanted to flex their muscles and use the tremendous amount of weapons that they have had stockpiled that they haven't used. So the military probably are generally happy because they get to, you know, practice all their new guns and weapons. But as a country, I think they have not done as well as they would like. It's taken longer than they expected to clear up the Yemen situation. But Yemen is a neighboring country, and they feel that this is, you know, it's in their neighborhood. They have to fix things in Yemen because it could affect their situation.
The decision by Saudi to get involved in Yemen, is this something that was primarily as a result of a decision taken by King Salman, or was it broader than that? If King Abdullah was still alive and well, would he have gone the same route?
It's hard to say. I would argue that it has to do with the change of leadership. But if King Abdullah was still alive, I don't know. I don't think. I mean, they've always depended on diplomacy and using money and politics rather than the military. But if they were pushed to the edge as they were with their neighboring country being taken over by what they consider a pro-Iranian regime, they might have done something. But most likely, what we've seen in the past, Saudi was more depending on diplomacy. Now, they have a young defense minister who, you know, as I told you, they want to use the guns that they have.
Mm. From Yemen to Syria, is Assad closer to defeat?
He's not in good shape. His army is in bad situation. He's unable to recruit people into the army, and he even admitted that himself. But the question is no longer whether he's closer to defeat or not. The question is what is happening on the political front. Ever since Iran signed the agreement with the Western countries and China and Russia, Iran has been playing a much bigger role, as has Russia. And one gets the impression that the U.S. quietly turned over the Syrian file to the Russians and said to them, you know, solve this problem any way you can, and we will back you up. Because it seems that the Americans are totally not interested in the Syrian situation except for the fight against ISIS. And so a lot of discussions are going on in Russia and in Tehran, and there is apparently preparation for some kind of a Geneva 3 conference soon with some people from the regime and the opposition, as well as Russia and Iran. So I think, you know, this year, the end of this year, we will see some kind of a resolution some kind of temporary resolution of the Syrian situation.
You made reference there to the fight against ISIS. How is that going?
It is not going very well. The Iraqis are still not able to get their act together. There's still a lot of disagreements within Iraq. The Syrian opposition is still shattered, and there is no single clear roadmap to get rid of ISIS in Syria. There are some Syrian guys who are being trained by the Americans, and many expected Turkey's change of direction to be a game changer. It hasn't, because Turkey is only interested in attacking the Kurdish PKK rather than ISIS. So we're not anywhere close to resolving that conflict, although I would say that the Turkish situation has improved the American ability to bomb them some more, but you cannot resolve this conflict only by bombing. You need people on the ground, and until now, no formula has been found to get troops on the ground.
And finally, Mahmoud Abbas resigning as leader of PLO. What does this mean in the bigger picture?
Well, there is two ways to look at this. There is a political way and there is a tactical way. Politically, Mahmoud Abbas is frustrated. There is no movement on the peace process. The Americans have basically washed their hands from the Palestinian issue. The international community is not able to do anything. And even the attempts to have reconciliation with Hamas has fallen apart, because Hamas is now, with the help of Tony Blair, trying to find their own long-term resolution with the Israelis. And so I think he's trying to kind of reshuffle the cards, if you will, by resigning. But tactically, I think what he's trying to do is he wants to reformulate the PLO, and eventually I think he wants to resign from being the president of the Palestinian state, which is really not a state, and stay on for a while as the chairman of the PLO. I think this is a tactical move for him to get rid of some of his opponents and bring some more of his supporters into the executive committee of the PLO. But there is also a political side to it, which is that he's frustrated with the peace process.
Dawood, jazakumullah for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Dawood Khattab standing in this morning on the Middle East Update, giving us an update on the latest from Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, as well as Palestine.